Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Monday, May 18th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr., and joining me is Tim Ma fucking Geddes.
Let's him host. It sounded like you said May 18th, and I was just like, I don't even know what day it is. I don't know what month it is. You might have just made a new day and month and week, whatever the fuck up, and I would believe
it. Dude, it's 2020, the year of possibilities. Man.
Yeah.
You never know anymore, it's right? I got a man. New date.
I'm there.
I mean, new dates
here's
is
a, here's a new date for you.
May 18th. Tim, I'm always, and I feel like I say this every time you're on the show, but I always have to point it out. I'm always amazed by how much you're able to match. You got the red bomber jacket, and you got the lights to match it. It's dude, fresh. And the black on black violence going on, man.
Thank you. Oh, wait, what?
The black shirt and the black cow. I call it black on black violence.
Okay, you can say that.
I can say that.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. But I will say that last night I watched a bunch of Disneyland shows on this, like fireworks shows and World of Color and shit, with all the hue lights synced, and it was an experience.
Bless. Really?
I can't wait till you can come over and hang out, just get enveloped in color and imagination.
Dude, I'm so upset. Which hue lights are synced?
What do you mean?
Which hue lights? Is it just the ones on the side, or do you have? Because it looks like you got a little glow underneath.
It's these two.
Uh-huh.
It's the one behind my desk right here.
All right.
Kev, the one in the bathroom. Uh-huh. And the one in the hall, which lights up the entire hall.
Whoa.
It's real fucking sick.
Tight.
Yeah.
I'm so upset because I was supposed to be over there to watch Parasite mm-hmm. right before the quarantine happened. It was supposed to be
the irony.
The irony in it. And like I can't wait to be over there to actually do that because like I was there to watch
Horse Girl,
yes, the weird Alison Brie movie that mm-hmm. I actually recommend people go check out because it was actually quite the experience to watch it. It's called Horse Girl. Check it out. And yeah, like that theater for people watching and listening, that theater feels as good to sit in and actually experience as it looks. And so shout out to that.
I love it.
But Tim, enough about theaters. Today's stories include Anthem still being worked on, Respawn's second studio, and more because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, where we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when you get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, next week is Kind of Funhouse Week, which, Tim, I'm going to have you explain to the people because you've been organizing this.
Yeah, man. Me and Elise Willems over at Funhouse have been working on this for a while now. It all kind of spurred from the idea that Lord of the Rings in Review starts next week, which is very exciting for everybody. And Elise is going to be part of that. And she hit us up. She's like, you know, we've been talking about doing a collaboration week forever. This seems like the best time to do it. And I was like, that is a good call. So we're going to be all up in their content. They're going to be all up in our content. We recorded a bunch of gameplay videos already that are going to go live on their channel next week. They're going to be with us live for pretty much everything. Adam Kovic's joining us for 2 episodes of Games Daily. Alana's joining us for 2 episodes of Games Daily.
Oh, snap.
The podcast is going to, it's going to be a surprise smorgasbord of guests on that.
That's a
one.
Good word.
And then, Elise and James are going to be on KFAF. We're going to be on Dude Soup. We're going to be on Screen, or not Screencast, that's our shit, on whatever the fuck they call their shit, the movie
Film
Show.
House.
Film House. That's what it is. But yeah, it's going to be super awesome. And just there's a calendar going around to schedule. You can go to twitter.com/kindoffunnyvids. We've been reposting it. Funhouse has been reposting it. Shenanigans are sure to ensue.
Yes, so stay tuned for that. That's happening all next week. I'm very excited about it, specifically Games Daily, of course, a game to host with Alana and Adam Kovic. But you'll have more info on that later in the week as we announce the schedules. And yeah, like stay tuned at Funhouse on Twitter, at Kind of Funny Vids, of course, on Twitter to keep up with the schedules and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Remember, we're doing a core game jam. That's happening. kindoffunny.com/gamejam. $100 gets donated to Extra Life for every game submitted. And to enter a game, you just publish a new game on the core platform in one of 4 categories: party game, kind of funniest game, retro game, and pop culture inspired game. There's $5,000 in prizes to be won. Again, head to kindoffunny.com/gamejam for more info on that. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Muhammad Muhammad, Blackjack, and Al Tribesman. Today we're brought to you by Brooklinen and ExpressVPN, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
Baker's dozen!
Before we get into that, I forgot to say the most exciting part to me of the Kind of Funhouse week is we're finally releasing the stand-up comedy special that we did at RTX last year. So it's a full 2 hour straight up comedy special that was like professionally recorded. And it has like 13 different people, some of us doing it for our second time, some of us doing it for our third time, a lot of people doing it for their first time. It has Alana doing stand-up for the very first time. It has Blaine Gibson from Rooster Teeth doing it the first time. It has Gia Harris doing stand-up for the first time. Gia was there. Yeah, so that goes live next Monday on Memorial Day. So exciting stuff.
Awesome. Can we talk about how Kevin is being sucked into space? There's a sound that I assume is the vacuum. Kevin, can you confirm it's your vacuum?
So you're going to turn like them. That's what's going to happen? You're going to just sit there and make fun of me? Is that what your goal is? Because it goes both ways.
I didn't want to make fun of you, Kevin.
I'll tear you down emotionally.
Like, can you guys listening imagine the perspective that Kevin has right now? That with what he's doing to this show, that we're the bad guys for calling out the fact that there's some weird fucking space creatures trying to suck him up.
Why am I making noise? Why do I have to like make these sounds? You know what I mean? You want to just do it? You can make the sounds. I should just be running the show, pressing the buttons. Who cares what's going on in the noise in my background? It shouldn't be here.
Kevin, all I'm saying is that I'm proud of you for keeping the house clean, for keeping that vacuum going. You know.
He's done.
He's gone. Story number one.
The news.
Anthem is still being worked on. I'm pulling this from Matthew Handrahan at gamesindustry.biz. EA BioWare's troubled online shooter Anthem is being redesigned by an incubation team of 30 people, which is at the start of a longer process. In a post on the official blog, BioWare Austin studio director Christian Daly gave the first substantial update on Anthem's development since February, when it was confirmed that regular updates would be abandoned in favor of a more substantial redesign. Quote, "We're committed to this project," said Daly, who added that the Anthem team is starting to validate our design hypotheses, end quote. There are around 30 people working on Anthem right now, which Daly described as its incubation team. Quote, "We're a small team earning our way forward as we set out to hit our first major milestone goals. Spoiler, this is going to be a longer process. And yes, the team is small, but the whole point of this is to take our time and go back to the drawing board. And a small team gives us the agility a larger one can't afford," end quote. Daly's comments underline the difficulty of the task that BioWare has set itself, a rare case of a major publisher sticking with a failed AAA launch rather than cutting its losses and moving on. In February, GamesIndustry.biz's Rob Fahey explored that idea, drawing a comparison with Square Enix's effort to rebuild Final Fantasy XIV, quote, "Admitting defeat and shutting down Anthem after a year on the market would be a major blow to BioWare's credibility as a core gaming studio," end quote, Fahey said. Quote, "As Square Enix has shown, a hell of a lot can be forgiven and forgotten if a game's overhaul really works well, perhaps even to the point of rescuing BioWare from the serious reputational damage Anthem's launch date has caused," end quote. Now, Tim, I first saw this news story, because this was breaking, I want to say Friday, during Games Daily, I saw it. I might have brought it up to Greg after the show as like a breaking news story, and it was one of those things where it's like, it's news, but it's not big news. Like, we already know Anthem's kind of revamping and doing all this stuff. But I wanted to bring it to the forefront of this show because I think it sparks an interesting question and conversation, which is it too late for Anthem? Do you think Anthem still has a chance to come back and actually be redeemed and bring BioWare from the studio who just had two strikeouts, right, with Mass Effect Andromeda and Anthem? Is it too late, do you think?
You know, I think that the industry has kind of proven, especially in the last couple of years, that it's never too late for a turnaround story. Anytime something seems really dire, there's always the chance it comes back like stronger than ever. I will say, though, in the case of Anthem specifically, I don't think that an incubation team of 30 people is the answer for that. I feel like this is kind of a last ditch effort, and this is them trying to save face to at least stay committed to their commitments that they made without kind of just fully backing off. But that's not much at all, and I don't think that that's going to really solve the core issues that the game has, or more than just the game, the kind of perception of the game that is out there in the public. So I think that there's always a chance, but I do think that when it comes to Anthem, that it's a very, 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 very slim chance that there's a turnaround possible here.
What do you think they need to do? Right, like to the game itself. I don't know if you actually got to try out Anthem at all, but as somebody who did, right, my main issue with Anthem was that there just wasn't the content there. It seemed like it was lacking in a lot of the features that would make it feel like a full fledged games as a service game, right? Like you look at a game like Destiny, and it feels like there's just so much to do. It feels, and granted, Destiny took a bit of time to get there, but you know, soon after Vanilla Destiny, I think it was The Taken King that was the thing that really brought everybody back and made everybody go like, oh snap, this is a thing worth looking at and playing, right? Mm-hmm. Because the content, they had the story, they had the modes, they had the continual updates that brought people back time over time again, and that continued with Destiny 2. With Anthem, it seems like the issues with it were more to its core, right? Like there was kind of the lack of a story worth caring about for a lot of people. Like I remember the news stories leading up to it and how they were talking about how like romance options weren't really a thing. And I think the more and more people started to realize what Anthem was going to be story-wise, the less interesting it became. Mm-hmm. There's that. There was the lack of content updates, right? You had that. And then I also think like you just had technical problems. Like I remember while playing in the early days, because I only stuck with it for like maybe, actually, I don't know if I played the final game. I think I played the beta, which was like the week before the game came out. And I remember that beta having a lot of technical issues as far as games not loading, games freezing up, just a bunch of different things. And then once mm-hmm. you got into the final game, from what I've heard from people talking about it, those issues also carried over.
Yeah, those are the type of issues that I think can get kind of like pressed out over time and people can forgive, but that's only if those are the only issues. But I think the bigger problem is, and you know, we talk so much about Anthem and Fallout 76, at their core, their issue was that the devs weren't delivering the game that people wanted from those devs, right? People wanted a story from BioWare. Like that's what they think of when they think of quality BioWare games. And this was kind of absolutely not that. And I feel like in order for them to turn this around, like to answer your question of what do I think they would need to do, I think that they would need to drastically commit to this and understand that they're going to lose out. I think it would have to become some type of free-to-play situation, and there would need to be a lot of kind of like make good decisions made to kind of engender a new community of people. Like it's not just the jaded people that first played it that paid for the game that are angry for paying for a product that was simply not up to par. But I do think it'd be necessary to get in a community that does kind of fall in love with whatever this new product is, and then kind of over time convincing the older players to kind of come back. But that would all require a lot more than 30 people on a team. I think that would require kind of a full focus on making Anthem something of consequence with a lot more content and a real kind of reboot of a launch.
At what point do you think it's too late for them? Because like for me, when I hear them talking about this 30 person incubation team, right? Like I think at face value that can come off as worrisome, because it makes you feel like, all right, this is very much a project that like they don't care about as much, right? Like it doesn't seem like they're putting as much focus on it since this is just a 30 person team working on it. But to me that kind of tells me that it seems like they're really going back to the drawing board. Like the fact that they have I feel like with 30 people you can have those focused conversations of like, all right, let's really focus on what works, what doesn't work, let's focus on what we can kind of flesh out and just throw things at a wall and see what sticks and see what doesn't stick. I feel like with 30 people those conversations become more clear, as opposed to having a larger team still working on updates, still cranking stuff out. And so like for me, if they come back in like let's say, fall with something substantial. Say they do call it Anthem 2.0, or they call it Anthem Next, or I guess they could do the No Man's Sky thing. I think it was called No Man's Sky Next, right? Go with that and try to have that, I guess, last effort push in order to get people in, right? Like, if that last push doesn't work, then I think it's over. But I feel like they could have one more shot if they play their cards right.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I think it's too late. I think at what point is it too late? It's already crossed that. But I do think that there is still the option, a very slim chance, that they could try again and it does kind of hit. I don't think it'll ever hit as hard as they originally wanted to and envisioned it being. But can you imagine if it came out revamped, free to play, as a launch title on next gen? And just kind of having, like, that could be a pretty interesting kind of entry point for people, where a lot of the issues, the tech issues, could be solved with the more powerful hardware. The loading would be severely cut down. But then they would still need, you know, kind of like make some enticing events going on and make sure that they have a roadmap that they can actually stick to. But I think that it wouldn't necessarily be a selling point for people for next gen, but it would be a nice thing that we see every time a console launches. You have this new thing, you play the one or two big experiences that are kind of hyped up for launch, and then you're kind of sitting there like itching for more. Like, you just want to use the system, right? And I think that that could be their best shot. I don't know if they're going to be in a place to be prepared for that, but I mean, hey, we do have EA Play coming up. So, like, I'm actually a little bit surprised that EA is doing a conference this year. What I forgot the way that they phrased the announcement, but they made it sound like it was different than what they did last year, which was just kind of like the developer interview thing without any actual announcements. So, because last year all we got was, we knew we were going to get the debut of Fallen Order, but besides that, it was just the interviews, right?
Yeah, it was like content specific for games. And so you had like Sims updates, where I think that Sims update for E3 would have been like the island themed thing. And then for Apex, you got the new season stuff. But yeah, like, you didn't really get any new big announcement for like any new games aside from Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, let's see. During this year's digital event, we'll showcase our games through a live broadcast, community content, and more. So I guess it doesn't necessarily say that they're making announcements. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're not going to.
I feel like with next gen looming over the horizon, and with EA not necessarily having a slate that we're aware about for this year outside of the sports games, like I feel like for them not to come out and make new announcements would be a big misfire for them, because at that point it's like, all right, like, what are y'all doing then? Like, are you guys just gonna show up at the console manufacturer events, right? Like, are we gonna expect to see you at that PlayStation's thing and Xbox's thing in that case? Like, I feel like you have as EA, as one of the big publishers, you kind of have to be there. And so I mean, I don't know if I expect Anthem to be there in June, but I think you bring up a very good point about next gen, because like, say they do come out fresh at the launch of PS5 and Xbox Series X, and it is, hey, we're free to play now. Because Destiny pretty much did it, you know, if it's working out for Destiny, we can probably figure out a way to make it work and get people invested in a way where it becomes more about our big content drops, our big expansions, than it is about buying the base game. Like, the base game is really going to be the thing that gets you in. If they can make that work and it can come out free to play on next gen, I think that could be huge for them, especially if they have their shit together. Because at this point, I think it's going to be really hard to get people to buy Anthem. Like, I think that's almost an impossible ask. Nothing's impossible, because people, like, No Man's Sky was pretty much able to figure that out. But I feel like for Anthem, you probably want a player base that's going to be way bigger than No Man's Sky's. And so, yeah, if they come out free to play towards, let's say, launch window, and they're like, hey, here's what we have for Anthem. Here's the future of it. Here's what we've done to make the content more interesting. Here are the different modes. Here's, I don't know, here's like a competitive mode. Here's this, here's that. And they're able to stick the landing. I think that could speak to a brighter future for Anthem.
Totally. I just found the actual tweet that EA put out, because I do remember, I swear that I saw this stuff. So it says, EA Play goes digital in 2020. See you June 11th at 4 p.m. PST. World premieres, news, and more.
There you go.
So we're gonna get some games. So that's cool.
That's cool. Speaking of EA, story number two Respawn's opening a second studio to focus on Apex Legends. I'm pulling this from Rebecca Valentine at gamesindustry.biz. When Apex Legends launched in March of last year, Respawn Entertainment had laid the groundwork for its momentum through deals with content creators and its plan for a sudden surprise release. But speaking to gamesindustry.biz, Respawn COO Dusty Welch says the game's sudden popularity took the studio by surprise, reaching over 1 million players in its first 8 hours, 10 million in 3 days, 25 million in a week, and 50 million in its first month. Since then, Apex Legends has remained steadily popular despite competing against multiple other free-to-play Battle Royale titles. In fact, it's popular enough that Respawn is opening a new studio in Vancouver just to focus on its continued development. This will be Respawn's second location alongside its existing studio in California and will be led by a team including head of operations Henry Lee and team director Steven Ferreira. They, along with Apex Legends game director Chad Grenier, join Welch to share the philosophy behind the new studio and what we can expect from the coming months and years. EA CFO Blake Jorgensen has said in the past he expects Apex Legends to have a 10-year run ahead of it. And that it would effectively be the publisher's main shooter in fiscal 2021, which is the current fiscal year, which is how EA works. That sounds like a lot of pressure on Respawn to both create and maintain a blockbuster title, but Welch says that EA has been surprisingly hands-off. Quote, I've never run a franchise before where there's been so little or no pressure from the publisher or from corporate or my partner about the monetization or the revenue, he says. That is not how Respawn has been wired or built. I don't think EA is wired or built that way. Some of the philosophy behind opening a second studio primarily for Apex Legends was to alleviate some of the struggles of the California team, giving it room to breathe and more total personnel to focus on the game. It's a move that seems to track with past comments by Respawn CEO Vince Zampella about Apex Legends being updated less frequently to ensure its developers weren't overworking. So Tim, this is kind of the opposite side of the coin totally. As far as the Anthem thing is concerned, right? Like Apex Legends, a game that surprise dropped out of nowhere, came out, killed it, right? Got 50 million players in a month, which is huge for them, and has remained like the big shooter coming out of EA over the last year, right? Like, and them opening up a second studio just to focus on Apex Legends seems to point at like this is a big EA franchise going forward.
It's a success story, man. Them talking about the 10-year track, that's fantastic. I think that, you know, you got to give them props for the shadow drop they did. That was unprecedented and a major success in every single way. The fact that they took that and wrote it out and it's still something exciting. The fact that you and Andy are equally excited now about season 5 that you were about season 2 is good news. Right? Like that's like they got you by the balls, and that's like as a gamer where you want to be.
I mean, yeah.
When it comes to this type of stuff, what's very interesting to me, and this is just very anecdotal evidence, I was talking to a bunch of my friends who are not really in the gaming sphere. They play games every once in a while. You know what I'm talking about. Just like the kind of casuals. The people that play Call of Duty a lot. When Apex dropped, everyone was on it. I feel like that was actually their kind of introduction to Battle Royales. They'd heard about PUBG, Fortnite's a little too kiddie. Right. But Apex was like, oh, shit, I'm gonna give this a shot. And they all loved it. But now that Warzone's out, they're just all on Warzone. And it's interesting to me where anecdotally, it kind of seems like Apex is that steady, like real gamer game. And I can see that kind of holding that spot. Whereas like Rainbow Six Siege, I think, is another example of a similar thing where it's like that's a gamer's game. And the more hardcore kind of competitive multiplayer like enthusiasts are going to be playing these games for years to come if the developers keep giving them events to come back to and reasons to care. And it's a model that is just working. I think we've really first saw it start with like Overwatch, where these console games are getting these updates that it's games as a service in a way that doesn't feel like the grindiness of Destiny and all that. It is more about the competitive side of it. And I love that that can live alongside the mainstream popularity of Call of Duty that will, at this point, never go away. It might take a little hits and drops every once in a while, but they're going to stay relevant. And then there's the side of the Fortnites and things. It's cool to see kind of video games and the ecosystem change and evolve over time. And I think the most exciting bit of it is that there's now proof between Rainbow Six Siege and Apex Legends that there is a successful track that the gamers like, the devs like, the publishers like it's just kind of like it can work without feeling abusive.
Yeah, no, and for sure. I think that's the big thing for Apex, right? Like, Apex for me is the battle royale game that came out and did it right from the get-go, and it's just been figuring out ways to do it better and better as they go. Like, there have been slip-ups, right? There have been like microtransactions in Apex that felt kind of predatory, but even when those moments happen, like, you see Respawn notice that and then react to it and make things better going forward. Like, that, and that's only, as far as my knowledge goes, that's only happened like maybe once or twice. Like, there was an update back in August that had like a skin that, like, if you really wanted it, you'd have to spend money and like basically I think it was like randomized in some sort of way. Like, it was like, you know, they have moments of having items that feel predatory in that way. But overall, like, if you look at Apex Legends, like, it came out and not only was it welcoming, right, for new players, not only was it a thing of like, oh yeah, this is an easy game to get into because mechanically it feels approachable, but also at the same time I think it pushed boundaries for battle royale games in terms of all the new mechanics it added, right? Like, you look at the ping system, you look at the mobility, you look at the different characters, you look at the different abilities for all the different characters, alongside like how diverse the cast is, right? Like, Apex Legends did so much and is doing so much to really push what the genre is doing, that, like, you know, it should be commended for that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, to what you're saying, right? Like, it's interesting to see this game kind of coexist with games like Fortnite and Call of Duty, because yeah, like, Call of Duty Warzone is dope. Fortnite is also dope. Apex Legends for me is like the perfect battle royale game, because it does exist in that nice space where it is like, you call it the gamer's game, and I think it is that to an extent, but at the same time, I think it is, it's one of those things where it's just focused, right? Like, it doesn't, for me, the problem that I have with Warzone is that it still feels too much like Call of Duty, right? Like, navigating the map, for me, it doesn't necessarily feel as fun, because it is like, you know, Call of Duty is designed as like more of a contained shooter, right? Like, you have different maps, you have like, this is a shooter that was designed at the core to be played with like deathmatch in mind in modes like that. And they did a really great job of adapting that to Warzone. And they've had multiple tries to get it right, because they had Blackout with Black Ops a couple years ago. But for me, playing Warzone still feels somewhat not right. Whereas Apex Legends, from the ground up, like, you feel mobile, you feel like the way that they've adapted almost like an open world feel to the map, where you are finding new areas and you get like the pop-up that is like, oh, here's Skulltown that you just discovered. Like, they really did things right in Apex Legends. And so them, EA opening up another Respawn studio in Vancouver, I think is very interesting, and it makes sense, because this seems like a franchise they want to do a lot with going forward. I still maintain that prediction that we might see an Apex Legends single player game, and that would be a really cool idea for them. But even if not, right, like, having Respawn have the freedom to do more, allowing them to have the freedom to put all focus on Apex while at the same time working on maybe Jedi Fallen Order 2 or whatever like other games they might be working on, I think is a great choice. And yeah, this seems to point to good things for the future, which I'm really excited about. Mm-hmm. Story number 3. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 won't have microtransactions at launch. This is from Jordan Alleman at IGN, who writes, "The Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 remasters won't feature microtransactions at launch, but they could arrive later down the line if fans demand more content." Speaking to GameSpot, Vicarious Visions boss Jen O'Neill told the outlet, quote, "Everything that you see at launch is going to be unlocked with gameplay. We're not planning on monetization at launch," end quote. Let's be clear. That doesn't seem to mean that Vicarious Visions specifically intends to add microtransactions later down the line for the sake of it. GameSpot appears to paraphrase O'Neill, saying that they would only arrive if there was fan demand for extra in-game content. Tim Geddes, Tony Hawk Pro Skater fan number 1, how does that strike you?
So first off, I just want to say Jen O'Neill is fantastic. She's great. I've talked to her many times about different things, but my favorite moment with her was E3 a couple years ago when they were showing off Crash Insane Trilogy. And for my birthday, they brought Crash Bandicoot, the guy in the suit, over to the GameSpot stage to like sing happy birthday to me. And while he did that, Andy Cortez was in the interview and he asked Crash Bandicoot if he wanted to come back to our sex dungeon. And Jen's face was like, oh no. Like, what did we get ourselves involved
with?
I miss the same dungeon.
I'm thinking about earlier E3. I remember when E3 where like Nick was dancing with like people in costumes, but that was
Tearaway people. That was E3 2015. Yeah, this was E3 2017. It must have been. But no, okay. So go back to the actual question here about the microtransactions. It's a weird thing, and like I feel like this is kind of non-news in the sense that like even what they said here of like it's a paraphrasing. It's weird because Activision loves money. And they've proven it in some pretty shady ways. But when you look at the Vicarious Visions games, like the Crash Insane Trilogy and the Spyro Trilogy, it's like their DLC was super chill. Like, it was free. I don't think there was any paid DLC at all. But there wasn't much of it. But then you look at the Beenox side of things with Crash Team Racing, and that was a similar situation where they said there wasn't going to be microtransactions at launch, and then there ended up being a lot of microtransactions. But then they ended up making stuff, and they balanced it over time, and it ended up being fine. But it's like there was waves of there isn't any. Now there is. Now it's kind of like chilling out a little bit. Yeah. I feel like we could see a similar situation here, even though it's a different team. It's still Activision that's over it, and I feel like there's a lot of different things that they could do that personally – I would be interested in. Microtransactions aren't necessarily one of them, but DLC packs, I'm fucking in, man.
Tim, the nanobiologist writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames just like you can and says, hey guys, and happy Monday. Vicarious Visions announced that there will be no microtransactions at launch. Of course, this raises questions like, what microtransactions could Activision introduce to a skateboarding game? So I pose the question to you. What would you like added eventually to Tony Hawk Pro Skater? Soundtracks? New maps? What about a remaster of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 or Thug as a complete DLC pack? Thanks, the nanobiologist.
So a whole bunch of different things. I would love all of that. I don't think... when they released Tony Hawk's Pro Skater HD last gen, there was a DLC pack that added reverts and 3 Tony Hawk 3 levels. And that was cool. In the style that this game is going that we've seen, I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing some type of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 pack. Mm-hmm. I feel at minimum, we're going to get a couple levels from that game. I'm hoping there's some type of season pass system or something that actually gives us substantial content downloads. Cause I want all of this. Like, I want this to end up being like, imagine if they just keep adding. So it's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1+2+3+4,
like,
you know,
that would be my answer, right? Like, I feel like that'd be the most ideal thing. Cause you have the mechanics there. You have the reverb in the manual. Like, they've designed this game in a way where if you're a Tony Hawk fan, then like, this is the ideal pro skater game for you mechanics wise. So, you imagine they can just add +3 and it'll just all work fine.
Totally.
Really, it's just map packs.
Exactly. And 3 didn't really add anything gameplay wise besides the revert. And so it should be in theory able to handle all of its stuff. What's really exciting to me is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 was the game that kind of like opened up a lot more. It was more like open worldy maps and like the gameplay style changed where you weren't just doing 2-minute runs to do all the different goals. It was, you know, you kind of walk up or skate up to people and like they'll give you a challenge. Then you have to do skate or whatever. So the game changes. So I'd be interested to see how they kind of get the THPS4 style into this. I feel like that'd be a bit more difficult. But from a feel and gameplay perspective, when I was doing my interview with Jen and some people over at Vicarious, I was trying to push them and ask about the gameplay elements. And I was extremely excited that they're not just sticking to the mechanics of 1 and 2, because I really feel like that it wasn't until 4 that Tony Hawk fully peaked in how it should feel. 3 added the revert, but 4 added the spine transfers and the balancing out. So when you like go off of a ramp, And if you're sideways, you would just like hit the ground and fall. But in the air, you could hold R2 and like flatten out so you actually land correctly. It was like the last mechanic that was necessary to just feel like you're in full control of your character. And they were telling me that all of that up to that is in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, which leads me to believe there's at least some type of plan to incorporate some things of up to 4, but that would be a pretty big challenge. I don't think we're going to get Thug. That would have to be its own standalone game, I think, which is exciting to think about.
Which, yeah, it would be super exciting. I still don't know if they would do it, because I feel like once you get to Thug, that becomes not obscure, but not as asked for. Like, I feel like Tony Hawk Pro Skater is a thing that people want and people actually ask for, whereas Thug is just one of those things that would be appreciated more so than like people thirsting and fiending for it.
I think you are underestimating it. I think you're right, but I feel like if this game succeeds, there has to be the what's next. We saw it with Crash. What's next? The Spyro games, right? Crash Team Racing. I feel like it is going to be a similar thing, that if this succeeds in a way that I kind of expected to, and if the game is as good as I think it's going to be, I would not be surprised if we got Thug, because Thug was very popular. It just, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is so iconic and tied to PlayStation that it's a little bit different. Now, the one thing, he was a nanobiologist bringing up music and stuff. I'd be interested in that. Probably less interested, though, than adding more maps and stuff. But I mean, hey, fuck it. If they add Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 maps, I want Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 soundtrack for sure.
That's my thing, too. Like, I think that'd be a great drop, right? Of like, say, a year after they launch this, you then get the DLC trailer, and it is like introducing the plus 3 pack, and it is like new maps, new songs, and it is the songs that you love from Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. You get exhibited there. Oh my god. And then I think from there, like, I guess how many new characters were there from in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 from 2, right? Like, I don't remember either. The ones I mainly remember are like the special characters, but maybe you do that, right? Maybe you do.
No way. We're not getting Wolverine and Darth Maul.
Officer Dick or whatever. Like,
Officer Dick, I imagine we're going to get even in this. He was number one.
Oh, was he in one?
All of them. He's been in all
of them. Oh, snap. I just remember
at least three. The main ones. But yeah, no, it's exciting. But I, the one thing that I really want, a feature I want from this game that I don't think they're going to do, is I love the soundtrack. I know, I don't know if we reported on this news on Friday or not, but they released the official soundtrack.
That was part of like You're Wrong.
There's like five missing songs or whatever. And like, honestly, Dub Pistol Cyclone from Tony Hawk 2 is in it. And that's the one that I was most worried about getting cut. So I'm pretty happy. But I wish that there'd be Spotify feature.
Integration.
Yeah, where you can just put whatever you want, because then you can just put whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
Like, imagine skating to Kick Push by Lupe Fiasco.
God, I want it so bad, right? And when Nanobiologist mentions like soundtracks, right? Like, I actually would enjoy music packs if it was new music. Like, here's how skater culture has evolved over the last 20 years. Yeah. And we're adding songs like Kick Push, or like we're adding like some Lil Wayne songs, since Lil Wayne is heavily associated with skating now. Like,
Lil Wayne, I booted up Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5 because I was that fucking itching for this game. Mm-hmm. And Lil Wayne is a skater in that game, bless.
Yeah, man. Like, I honestly don't think it's outside the realm of possibility to, like, even, I mean, Lil Wayne is a skater, wouldn't even surprise me in this game. I mean, the only reason I think they might not do it is because you get that association with Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5, but you do it as later DLC, like, people don't bat an eye, because we've already gotten we already know that this is a good game. All right, cool. Yeah, add Lil Wayne because we want to skate as him. Like, I feel like that'd be another great DLC drop, right? Like the Lil Wayne pack. Here's the character. Here's a couple songs.
Yeah. I gotta be real though. THPS5 is as bad as I remember.
Oh, is it?
It's
that doesn't surprise
trash.
Me.
Rash.
I remember, because I never played THPS5 for obvious reasons. But I remember like watching gameplay of it and being like, how did they get it this bad?
Yeah.
Like, they just how did they do this? Right? Like, you. And video games aren't easy to make, obviously. Like, we all know this. Like, it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of moving parts. It's a lot of mathematics that I don't understand. But like, I feel like the Tony Hawk Pro Skater, there's a certain feel that you should be able to get down. There's a certain way that you should know how Tony Hawk Pro Skater feels. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they could get it so wrong shocks me.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's wild. Speaking of wild, story number four, Ubisoft is suing Apple and Google over a mobile Rainbow Six Siege clone. I'm pulling this from Jordan Alleman at IGN. And Kevin, there's a link in the doc if you want to pull this up. It's a link to the IGN article, and they have some comparison photos.
I'm on it.
Thank you. Ubisoft is suing Apple and Google over an alleged mobile Rainbow Six Siege clone released for iOS and Android. The game, created by Alibaba's eJoy.com, is called Area F2. A Bloomberg report digs into the details of the lawsuit, in which Ubisoft's suit claims that Area F2 copies, quote, virtually every aspect, end quote, of Rainbow Six Siege, noting the operator selection screen and the final scoring screen as being particularly derivative. The game has millions of downloads so far. The Play Store alone lists over 5 million and touts itself as the first CQB FPS on mobile, offering a selection of agents, destructible environments, and equipment. Sounds familiar. Having tried the game for ourselves, and this is IGN talking, the resemblance is striking, with maps, loadouts, and more feeling instantly familiar to a Siege player. Kevin has it pulled up, the images, and let me tell you, when I first saw these images, when I was doing like the scroll back and forth so you can kind of see which is Rainbow Six and which is Area F2, at first I saw the pics of the mobile game and thought, oh wow, Siege Season 1 looks really different. Like, I didn't realize how much they updated it. Turns out that's not Siege. Turns out that's the mobile game.
When I first saw this, I saw it in video form, and the video was flashing back and forth between the two, and I didn't know which was which. So I'm right there with you, where it was just like, oh my God, these are so similar that like it's hard to tell when they're switching off. It's ridiculous, and they deserve to get sued.
I guess as somebody who plays quite a bit of Siege now, who didn't play it at launch, you could have told me that this was an image of Siege at launch, and I would have been like, oh, cool. Sweet. Yeah, that seems about right. So, interesting, fun story for you there. Story number five, and this is a Tim joint. Tim dropped this in the Slack. You can play a new Dance Dance Revolution game in your browser right now. This is from Ethan Gatch at Kotaku. Overnight, Konami released an alpha version of its upcoming browser-based Dance Dance Revolution 5 on PC. The company just tweeted it out. Currently free, the demo includes 15 songs you can play on a range of difficulties, from beginner up to expert. I'm not familiar with any of the songs, and again, this is Kotaku, but that didn't stop my head bobbing like mad to the tuned up beats. Instead of using a dance pad or controller to enter commands, you use the arrow keys on your keyboard, and they later updated the article to say that they figured out how to plug in a controller so you can play it that way too. It's just like being back in an early aughts arcade tourney, passing the time until your turn playing Step Mania on a stranger's laptop. And given how many of us are currently stuck at home, I can't think of a better moment to fall back down the DDR hole. All you need to do, so interesting way to phrase it. All you need to do is start playing is make a Konami account with the help of Google Auto Translate, if you don't read Japanese, and then click on the first orange tab on the left of the game's homepage. Tim,
yes.
Are you excited to do this?
I did it yesterday, and I played for way too long. Super fun. I love rhythm games, and like even dance pad or not, I just like love using the keyboard for it, and it was super fun. None of the 15 songs are like classic DDR songs, but they have the vibe, and it brought me back immediately. So much so that I looked into, like, I've been looking into getting a mat for the house.
Do you not have your old mat?
Well, I mean, those are all pieces of shit. Those are gone. They? Those are long gone. Yeah.
Are you getting a nice ass mat? One of them.
So here's my thing, Kev. I was debating getting a nice ass one, but then I was like, I'm not ready to commit that I'm going to use it that much. So I settled for one. There was like a $60 one that I found that people were recommending.
Come on, Tim.
And I was like, I mean, here's the thing. If I end up using it enough, then I'll commit and get a little better one.
I don't believe you. And neither does the chat. Am I right, chat? Give me a woot woot.
Hate him so much. Anyway, this is cool stuff. You can go check it out now. But yeah, it's a very interesting random thing for them to do. Konami, never making sense with their business moves. But here we are.
There you are. And then story number six is a quick one. Gamescom Opening Night Live is now happening on August 27th. This comes from a tweet from Jeff Keighley. He tweeted earlier today. He said, quick update, at Gamescom Opening Night Live will now take place on August 27th and kick off 3 days of Gamescom 2020. So there you go. Tim,
cool.
I'm very excited for Gamescom Opening Night Live. But August 27, 2020 is so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and grab shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Out today, we got Super Hero X for PS4. That may be uncomfortable, Kevin. We got Run for PC and Mac, Vector Lord for PC, Collection Quest for PC, Dungeon Solver for PC, and Get Over Blood for PC and Mac. We got no new dates and no deals of the day. Now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Brook Linen. Bringing comfort into your home is the ultimate form of self-care. And now, more than ever, it's important to take care of yourself and each other. You spend one third of your life in sheets. Don't you want them to be insanely comfortable? So put comfort first, like with new bedding, loungewear, towels, and more. Kind of Funny loves Brook Linen. Tim says it keeps him comfortable, and he's able to get the right colors that match with his room. Ain't that right, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
It's very true. Brook Linen products help you find comfort in the little things, morning routines, extra soft sheets, plush towels, comfortable loungewear, etc. It's hard to imagine a summer stuck inside the house, but if we have to do it to keep everyone safe, I want to be as comfortable as possible. That's where Brook Linen comes in. Brook Linen's Memorial Day event is going on now, and you don't want to miss out on all the big savings, including their newest hammam and linen collections. But if you can't wait, get 10% off your first order and free shipping with the promo code GAMES only at brooklinen.com. Brook Linen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. We're also brought to you by ExpressVPN. Being stuck at home these days, you probably don't think much about internet privacy on your own home network. Fire up incognito mode on your browser and no one can see what you're doing, right? Wrong. Even in incognito mode, your online activity can still be traced. Even if you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. That's why, even when you're at home, you should never go online without using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN makes sure your internet service provider can't see what sites you visit. Instead, your internet connection is rerouted through ExpressVPN's secure servers. Each ExpressVPN server has an IP address that's shared among thousands of users. That means everything you do is anonymized and can't be traced back to you. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your data with best-in-class encryption, so your information is always protected. Use the internet with confidence from your computer, tablet, or smartphone. ExpressVPN has you covered on every device. Simply tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is the fastest and most trusted VPN on the market. It's rated number one by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and countless more. So protect your online activity today with the VPN that you should trust to secure your privacy. Visit our special link at expressvpn.com/games, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/games. expressvpn.com/games to learn more. Tim.
Yes.
BravesFan88 writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, "Hey guys, first time ever writing in, even though I've been listening forever. I have a question about the new Tony Hawk 1 plus 2 coming out in September. Do you think there's a possibility that we could get to play as Spider-Man on the PlayStation version of the game? In Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, you can unlock the PlayStation version of Spider-Man from his Neversoft game and skate with him. You have to do all the challenges with create a character, and then you can unlock Spidey as a playable character. He even had a quote in his game when you swing by the Tony Hawk Pro Skater billboard, quote, "Hey Tony Hawk, I've skated with that guy," end quote. Thanks for answering, and thanks for years of entertainment and joy you brought to me. BravesFan88.
So here's the thing. Spider-Man being in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 was one of the hypest things I've ever seen. Secret video where it's Tony Hawk in the Spider-Man costume skating in real life with that sick ass 90s Spider-Man theme song remix. Well, hold on. It's a 60s Spider-Man theme song remixed in 90s style. It was awesome. Everyone YouTube it. Check it out. I freaking love that video. I've watched it countless times. I wish we can get Spider-Man in the game because I loved his special moves with the webs pulling the board to him and stuff. Super cool stuff. We're not going to see him in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, unfortunately, because licensing, obviously now Spider-Man is in different places. Neversoft has nothing to do with this. But the reason Spider-Man was in Tony Hawk 2 was because Neversoft worked on Tony Hawk and Spider-Man. Vicarious Visions worked on? Crash Bandicoot, baby. Yeah, Crash Bandicoot is going to be in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And that is the most Tim Gettys Venn diagram. Boom, right in the center there. I can't believe it, but it's happening. In some of the screenshots they released, you straight up see, like, there's graffiti, and it is from Crash Bandicoot.
Honestly, I would love to see Spyro in there, right? Like, as an Activision property. And, like, going back to Spyro, You're the Dragon. Yeah, like, there's skateboarding in that game, right? Like, I feel like that'd be a really cool fit and a really cool throwback to that. I think it could be really cool to see. And this would require like talks to happen. And this would require like both companies to jump over a couple of hoops, right? But like a PlayStation version of this game having Spider-Man isn't necessarily out the question if like you're able to get that PlayStation Connect going and that Sony Connect going and that Marvel Connect going, right? Like there's a lot of hoops to jump through, but I think there's a possibility. I think you can make it happen.
Oh my God.
If they really wanted to make it happen.
I wish. I really think that it's just prohibitive. There's no way that they're going to be able to make that happen.
Yeah. I would love to see it though. And I think that like that would then beg the question of what do you do on the Xbox side? Do we get Master Chief skateboarding?
If you added Spider-Man, you mean?
Yeah. If they did get Spider-Man on the PlayStation side, right? Like, what do you do for Microsoft?
That's the thing is I think that just gets too complicated too quick, where it's like they just want to like make this a complete package and put it out. So we're going to get Crash. I really believe it. That's super freaking awesome.
Now it's time to squad up. Jeff Luer writes in to squad up on PC and says, so GTA 5 is free on the Epic Game Store. And I was wondering if any best friends wanted to hop on and make some money in GTA Online. There's a kind of funny crew with plenty of room. I'm up for heist missions or just stealing some cars from my corporate vehicle garage. So please join my crew and maybe, maybe I'll see some best friends out in Los Santos. You can add Jeff Luer on PC. Hades Council is Jeff's username. That's Hades and then Council. Hades Council, which it just says PC. Okay. Oh, actually, he said Epic Game Store in the thing. So there you go. Add him on Epic. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write us in or you write in and let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Ignacio Rojas says, you can already listen to Spotify while playing games on PS4. So in theory, you can listen to Spotify songs while playing Pro Skater, which is a fair point. Sure. But there are ways to integrate it to make it more seamless. Like Driving last year did that.
Yeah, and that, what I want is it seamlessly integrated. Like, you can put a playlist into the Tony Hawk game because I want every 2 minutes when you do a run for it to then move to a different song. You know, I want it to be part of the experience because I feel like music is so tied to Tony Hawk that I don't want it to just be music playing over the game. I want it to be, like, part of the experience.
And then the Nail Biologist writes in and says, missed new date. Rainbow Six Siege Operation Steel Wave launches on all platforms on June 16th, 2020, with two new operators, one new Hard Breacher attacker, and one defender that slows down attackers for a couple seconds, and a map rework of House. And I definitely should have included this because I was literally watching this morning. The new update looks really cool. The new Breacher he's talking about here, I forget their name, but essentially they're like a long-distance Breacher where usually in Siege... Because, of course, like in Siege, it's a lot of breaching. It's a lot of, like, I'm blowing down walls so I can infiltrate, so I can rescue the hostage kind of thing. You have hard breachers, which are able to, like, break through fortified walls. But usually, like, to do that, you have to, like, go up to a wall and say, if you're playing as, like, Thermite, you then put, like, a bomb on the wall and blow it up. The new breacher they're adding for this new DLC, or for this new update, is basically somebody who's able to do that from long distance and is able to, like basically, I forget if it's, like, a thing they shoot or a thing they throw, but basically like attach a thing to a wall from a distance and break it from there. And so there you go. Hard Breacher's name is Ace. Thank you, Tommy Boy, and you're wrong. And that's it for you're wrong. Of course, actually before I sign off, this week's hosts are tomorrow, it's me and Emron. Wednesday, it's Greg and Gary Witta. Thursday, it's me and Greg. And then Friday, it's Greg and me. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.